thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
It's one of those days.
Here's John Williams.
Cooler by the lake, you betcha. 59 and yet 70s in some of our listening area in the suburbs and other parts of the city. That's Chicago for you. But good day for baseball, though. About as good as we've had in a very long time, these parts. And how about that? Cubs and Sox right here on WGN Radio. The Sox are on the road today. We'll take the red line up to Wrigley Field. I want to talk a little bit about that here in just a minute. Then Lisa Brennan Jobs joins us, the daughter of the late Apple CEO Steve Jobs, the author of that memoir called Small Fry. She'll be on with us after 1:30. Neil Steinberg wrote a piece in the Sun-Times that I only now am able to get to, but I thought it was pretty good last week when he talked about the difference between taking a cab or an Uber or Lyft. He was talking about going to O'Hare. There's a lot of bases that this touches, Neil. Let's talk a little bit about the difference between the two. What's the smart way to go to O'Hare Airport? What's the cheaper way to go to or from O'Hare Airport? Steinberg wrote about that. The answer may surprise you. That's around 2:05 this afternoon. You know, the Blackhawks convention is around the corner. We've got tickets we're going to give away to the convention at 2:35. Let's shoot for 2:35 on that. Where will you be at 2:35? Join us and we'll give away some Blackhawks convention tickets. It will not be hard to win. Lori Lightfoot is in New York. She's been making some news across the city, across the state, across the country. Our new mayor was on with Colbert. Now, they taped her segment today. It won't be on until tonight. Lynn Sweet from the Sun-Times was there. She wrote, Democrats, Lightfoot said, need to offer an agenda that defends human rights, our planet, and our economy. We've got to inspire and mobilize folks in 2020. This is no time for defeatism. It's time for courage, and we've got to stand for more than we are against Donald Trump. Now, that wasn't her to Stephen Colbert. She was actually speaking at a Democratic Party event. And Sweet says that she can't say, they have these licensing deals, she cannot say exactly what Lori Lightfoot said on the Colbert taping. But she said that she can describe it a little bit. She said, I asked about her preparation for the Colbert interview and if she had a comedy writer to help. And Lightfoot seemed taken aback that I would even raise the possibility. I'm pretty funny on my own, Lightfoot said. Lori, if you are, we will see. I was in the audience for the taping, but as a condition of letting me in, I had to agree not to reveal any direct content. But I can tell you what I observed during the segment, which runs about 6 minutes, she said. And she says that in it, Lightfoot was funny. They laughed at her jokes. They also laughed at Stephen Colbert Thursday night. We'll see how she does. I got to tell you, when I heard the reports yesterday of Hawk Harrelson describing going to Wrigley Field, I was a little, I don't know what the end of that sentence is. I mean, everybody knows that Hawk Harrelson is or was the Sox guy. And we all know that he doesn't like Wrigley Field. So when he was asked about it, I guess we can't be too surprised that he said Wrigley Field sucks. But at a time where I think there is some fluidity of fanship in this city, I think it's best for the White Sox as a brand to be as embracing. Don't be Ernie. I'm looking at Ernie. Come in here, Ernie. I'm going to yell at you for a second. I think it would be best for the White Sox brand. Ernie's wearing a White Sox hat and a White Sox shirt. He's the coach of our station softball team. And tell me if you agree with me on this. I think it would be best for the White Sox brand not to be the guys on the South Side with the chip on their shoulder. They need to be the team that says, hey, we're a really good club. We're going to be really good in the next few years. We're the most exciting thing in baseball right now. Everybody welcome under the tent. And don't be that, oh, the Cubs suck, the Wrigley Field sucks. Ernie, your thoughts?
Honestly, or
we're live on the radio.
Okay.
Honestly.
I agree with you. They should be magnanimous, I guess, and they should embrace that fact.
And I'm not saying, you know, kiss anybody's
butt. Years of torment.
Yeah.
Years of torment.
Being a White Sox fan.
Yes. It hurts being the second in the second city. You know, it's not a...
Well, how do you think that's going to get better?
Our play. With what's coming through our system and what's going to be the Sox in the next couple of years will, I hope, will right that ship.
I'm not a marketing guy, but it would just seem to me like the way to get more people to come to the games is elevate your game.
Right.
And then don't say the Cubs suck. Say, I don't care if you're a Cubs fan or not, you know, whoever you
fans.
Are. Just come on. Come on to the ballgame.
I will say this. I've been to both. Wrigley is an iconic park. It is known in Chicago, but it is not the most kid-friendly park. It's not the most friendly place for a younger baseball fan or a family. It's more of a park that you go to with your buddies. You go drink, you have fun, see stuff in the crowd you probably won't see other places. You go down to, I like to call it Sox Park. You go down to Sox Park or Guaranteed Rate, it's more of a kid-friendly environment. You have great food. You have places that the kids can go. They get into the shower. They throw the ball. They see, you know, they see things.
I don't disagree with anything you've said, but I think the notion that Cubs fans aren't baseball fans,
that's not a true thing.
Thank you.
That's not a thing.
Each fan base has bad fans that are rude. It's not just the Sox fans, let's be honest.
Cubs fans are baseball fans, and they're good fans. They know the game. They pay attention to the game. Sure,
but I mean, at both parks you can get that.
You get whatever you want if you want to look for something at either place. So when Hawk Harrelson then was quoted, you have that quote, Elif. So everybody said Hawk Harrelson said Wrigley sucks, and then everybody laughs. Yeah, let's go get him. And I'm thinking that is the wrong message to be sending. And I'll be honest with you, I think what Hawk said was actually not entirely accurately attributed to Hawk Harrelson. If all you heard was he said the Cubs Wrigley sucks, and everybody laughs. You go, well, there they go again. That's Sox fans being Sox fans, and that's not good for the brand.
No, it's not.
Okay,
I agree.
Here is a fuller telling of what Hawk Harrelson said.
2020, in my opinion, there's a chance that it'll be the greatest decade of Major League Baseball in Chicago history because the Cubs are good and they're not going anywhere. You know, it's going to be fun to watch us kick their ass.
And that's coming up.
Yeah.
You're not going to miss going to Wrigley Field, are you?
You couldn't give me a $5,000-$10,000 bill to walk, put another foot in that place. That is, I'm telling you what, that place sucks, you know, for the visiting team. I mean, it really does. Now, for the fans, it's great. The venue is great. You know, you can walk from the Wrigley all the way downtown if you want. You can walk from downtown to Wrigley. So the venue is beautiful. And once you get on the field, it's great. It's like Fenway. Fenway sucks, too. I mean, it really does. You know, they still got some of the same cracks and holes in the roof there as when I played. You know, back in the 60s and 70s, never again.
That's a fuller telling of what he thinks. He's not. That's not the Cubs suck. That's not Wrigley Field sucks, because for the fans, it's a fun time.
It's a great time.
He's saying if you're an opposing player or manager, it's not a good place to work. And fair enough. I mean, I don't care, but I mean, fair enough. But the soundbite is Wrigley sucks.
Right.
That's the one that got played a lot yesterday.
And that's
the one that
keep
quoted.
Being played.
And I was sorry to hear that. Now that I hear this, I'm like, wait a minute. That's a different comment.
And it is true. I've heard that before, that it is rough for the visiting team. The showers are cold. You know, everything is bad. They make everything the worst that it could be. And I've heard that before.
And it's changed since. I believe the rebuild has improved the visitors' accommodation.
I mean, it's like slapping a Band-Aid on an open wound. I mean, the place is old. It's time. At what point is it time?
No. Don't even have that conversation with me.
Well, you should listen real quick before I leave.
Nobody wants to hear you as a Sox fan say, you know, it's time we doze Wrigley.
You're right. I apologize, Cub fans.
Go ahead.
I apologize.
What else are you going to say?
Frank Kaminsky, the center for, I believe, I can't remember what team, 7 foot for the Bucks, I believe.
Yeah.
Or he was, if he's not anymore. He is a diehard Sox fan, and he came on with Chuck Garfine, and he really gave it to Wrigley. He said he would never, ever set foot in there and watch a game with Cub fans.
Which is more the attack of the Cubs.
Yes.
The Cubs fans.
He really went in and he really...
Okay. Well, that's fine. And I'm just a little guy working for a radio station that happens to be the Sox fans. And is fast becoming a White Sox fan. And it's not as hard as I thought it was going to be.
We're going to be good.
And I'm new to the club, so I guess I don't get to be the
Welcome.
Decider. But my advice would be, let's not be that. And I know I haven't struggled through
you're trying to erase a long history of
can't do it
of
overnight.
Angst and of just you're trying to erase a long history very quickly.
The TV ratings for the White Sox, Phil Rosenthal wrote about in the Tribune today. Let me tell you what those are in a minute, and we'll take your call too. 312-981. Thank you, Ernie.
You're welcome.
coach of the WGN radio softball team, by the way. The much quoted Ernie Skatton, our coach and production guy here. 312-981-7200. Your caller text is next on WGN. We'll take some phone calls with Kevin Powell, also from WGN Radio Sports. Hi, KP. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm excited for the, you call it the Crosstown Classic, John, Crosstown Series, City Series. What do you go with?
I know. And then you've got the branding with Wintrust on there, and I want to honor everybody. I just call it the Crosstown Classic. That's what rolls off my tongue.
I like that. Well, I'm excited for it, John.
We just talked to expert Ernie Skatton from WGN Radio softball team. Do you have anything to say in general before we take some phone calls about the Crosstown Classic?
You know, I think this year is interesting because the Sox have made clear strides. They made huge advancements in this rebuild that's still ongoing, but they're at a 10-game improvement from this time last year. And it's sort of, you're kind of seeing what the Sox are doing is exactly what the Cubs did and what other teams throughout the league are doing. So I think there's some storylines there, and obviously Eloy Jimenez making his debut. That kind of was one of the big trades that kicked off this rebuild was Quintana to the Cubs and Jimenez and Cease coming to the South Side.
Yeah, I think we got, I don't know, didn't we get the better part of that deal?
I think it's tough to say. I always thought that deal just made so much sense even before they made it, and everyone kind of shrugged it off because it was Cubs-Sox and nobody thought they would do it. But it made a ton of sense for both teams. Cubs needed a guy like Quintana, and the Sox needed prospects. I think it still is kind of a draw at this point. I think it makes sense for both.
Phil Rosenthal on the Tribune said, the Sox have improved their TV ratings by 49.3% compared with the Nielsen numbers from last year. Now, the 1.12 household ratings on NBC Sports Chicago, which translates to approximately 36,400 homes in the market, perhaps is only worth bragging about vis-a-vis the paltry 0.75 they averaged last year, 1.12 up 49%. Even when factoring in a 104% growth in digital streaming across NBC Sports Chicago, the Sox numbers pale in comparison to what the Cubs draw on the channel. Though Team Ricketts' NBC Sports Chicago household ratings this season, the Cubs are down almost 10%. They still get three times the audience that the Sox do. The Sox are up almost 50%. Okay, let's pick up a couple of phone lines, Kevin. Ryan wanted to say something. You're on WGN. Hi, Ryan. You're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon, King John. Hope you're doing well. Looking forward towards the series, not only on the north but on the south side. But my question is years ago when Hawk Harrelson went on that tirade on TV, not once but twice, why was he never reprimanded? I think he should have been fired because, number one, you represent Major League Baseball. Number two, you're representing the White Sox. And number three, you're representing the TV station that you're broadcasting on. Why was he never fired? You know, and as far as his comments yesterday, if I was working a door there, I wouldn't let him in. I'll listen to your answer. Thanks.
Thanks for the call. I don't think he's going to try and get it. I don't know. Is he going to the game? Is he going to be there?
No, during his rant yesterday, he said you couldn't pay him to go back to Wrigley. Just to clarify, too, what Hawk said, he says it's still a great, he knows it's a great experience for fans.
Yeah.
His perspective is normally as a broadcaster and as, you know, as the await the road team coming to Wrigley.
Yeah,
which they did redo their clubhouse this year, and it's much better than it was in the past.
You know, Kevin, before you got on, that's what we were talking about. I think that he was taken out of context. When I first heard the quote, I thought, oh, geez, let's not do that. Then you hear what he's saying, and he said, it sucks for the other team, like Fenway does, but those are great parks and the fans love it. So I think he was reasonable about it. But coming from Hawk Harrelson, everybody plays the one part. Anthony, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? You're on the air.
Hey, I'm enjoying this topic. I'm actually a longtime White Sox fan, believe it or not, from Cincinnati. Last year, I when the White Sox came here, I was there, and I was really impressed. There was a lot of White Sox fans. My question is, why is it always that the White Sox are a second fiddle? And I'm going to refer them to that North Side team that I absolutely cannot stand.
Okay, hold on. We're short of time, and I appreciate your long-distance call. Kevin, why are the White Sox the second team in this city?
I think Wrigley plays a large part in it. I don't really know for sure, John. I mean, I grew up a Sox fan on the north side. Now I cover both teams. I don't know. Maybe it's just the history and the charm that the Cubs have brought for so many years, the Sox were more of the kind of the gritty South Side team, and they had a little bit of an edge to it. So maybe the Cubs are just more of an easy, I don't know, more appealing to a larger mass. I'm not sure. I don't know exactly why. I'm sure Wrigley Field has a whole lot to do with it, though.
I think it does. I also think WGN Radio and TV did a lot to extend the brand. This is a 50,000-watt radio station that pumped them out throughout the Midwest. And before there was the Superstation, Channel 9 also got the Cubs out better than the White Sox. The White Sox used to be on Channel 44, for crying out loud. It was harder to see and hear the Sox than it ever was the Cubs. And there's something storied about the Cubs' absence from the World Series that made them lovable even when they were losers. Hey, listen, so where are you? You're with Roe today, right?
Yeah, I'm heading to Wrigley right now, and we'll be at John Barleycorn all afternoon leading up to Sox pregame. And we're giving away tickets for the next two on the south side, a pair every hour. So if you come out to John Barleycorn, Clark, right the steps from Wrigley Field. Yeah. We'll be there all afternoon.
Hey, have a good day. I'll come by and see you guys.
All right, that'd be great. Thanks, John.
Our Kevin Powell. Actually, I don't know if I'll come by and see those guys because, in fact, I think I will. I think I'll step over and see those guys. It's 129. Lisa Brennan Jobs' book is called Small Fry, the story of growing up the daughter of Steve Jobs. After the news, that's next. Lots of texts about our last half-hour conversation about the Crosstown Classic. The Sox travel north to Wrigley Field. The game today here on WGN Radio. I like Paul Sullivan's piece in the Chicago Tribune today, Six Things to Look For in the City Series, as he calls it. And number one is Eloy Jimenez's Wrigley Field debut. Remember, he was supposed to be a Cub once upon a time, and he wasn't hitting home runs on the south side. It was forever, it seemed, before we got one at home. Now, he's technically on the road, but you may root for the Cubs to win, you may root for the Sox to win, but I think it would really be fun for everybody to see him with one of those 462-foot home runs that he can hit sometimes. That would be hello, Chicago, that's for sure. Are we ready to roll in there, Ms. Garris? I've been reading this book called Small Fry. Have you seen it? Lisa Brennan Jobs' memoir of growing up as the daughter of Stephen Jobs. This book starts and ends with poignant deathbed scenes. The first is heartbreaking. The latter is more redemptive. And in between, you get 33 years of her growing up as the daughter of one of the most brilliant, famous, wealthy men in America and a sometimes depressed mother whose artwork could barely support them. Parenthood came easily for neither of her parents. Told through the eyes and remarkable memory of Brennan Jobs, we get a picture of a computer genius who famously denied his parentage, who was remote in every sense of the word, and who was really, really odd, cruel, you might say. Page after page, the author manages her mother and yearns for her father's attention, for a place, she says, in the hierarchy of his affection. Now, since the book was first published in September, her siblings and his widow have said that this was not the man they knew. But it's clear that this is her account of the man that she did know, or that she tried, sometimes desperately, to connect with. The reviews have been good. The New York Times review includes this. About Small Fry, they write, it has the defining aspect of a literary work. In the fallen world of kiss-and-tell celebrity memoirs, this may be the most beautiful, literary, and devastating one ever written. Lisa Brennan Jobs joins us now on WGN. Hi, Lisa. This is John. You're on in Chicago. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. Thank you for having me.
The book just came out in paperback. Congratulations on the first round of success since the fall.
Thank you so much.
By the way, I presume you read that review in the New York Times. What was your reaction to that when you saw that?
I didn't read the review in the New York Times.
Why? Were you nervous?
I'm the worst person to ask about reviews because I had a baby just when the book came out. And the tricky thing about memoir is people are sometimes reviewing the book they read, which isn't always the book you wrote. And so even if it's a great review, it can sometimes be disturbing to have your parents characterized in ways you wouldn't. And so I just thought, I have a baby, I can't go on an emotional roller coaster, and also I was incredibly sleep deprived.
Yeah.
So I decided to just show up for what I could do and not worry about what people were saying. But then people were saying good things. So that was nice.
Well, I'm probably not the first to tell you this, but it's doing really well. It's been a bestseller. The reviews have been strong.
It is.
But you are alluding to something that has sort of happened, and that is that, if I understand correctly in reading about the book after I read the book, you wanted it to be, I don't know if tender is the right word, but you seem to harbor more affection for your father than maybe I got as a reader.
Well, there is something about writing a memoir. You write it, and it's yours, and then you release it, and then it's theirs.
Yeah, yeah.
So whatever you got from it is the truth. However, I do feel that sometimes the depiction of my father, which I felt like was a depiction of a human, got a little twisted. And I think people are surprised sometimes when they pick it up, and instead of finding this sort of outlandish, far-fetched story, they find something that reminds them of their own story. And I do hear that again and again. That's just like mine. Or I, you know, and so I think my only fear is that when people focus on the difficult parts of my father, which were certainly very difficult, and growing up with him was at times extremely difficult, but when they focus on that and not on the more balanced picture, it distorts the perception of the book and makes it seem as if it's about him, and makes it seem as if it's about him only being difficult, and makes it seem less like a human story and more like a strange story. And I think that it's a human story. It's fairly universal. Like, if I showed him warts and all, I also showed my mother warts and all, I also showed myself warts and all. And of course, there's no excuse if someone abandons a child, except for the excuse of timing, and people are just, you know, doing their best, and they sometimes screw up.
Well, he was 23 when you were born, right?
He was 23. I was an accident. And then both of my parents, they were so young, and they were really trying. And you know, my father, like, he sort of fled the scene to some degree and said he wasn't my father, although I don't think that's what he believed. I just think he didn't want it to be true. You know, he's so young. And then later made a decision to come back and really tried. And I hadn't really taken that very seriously until I wrote the book, and then I realized, oh, gosh, it's really hard when you're an adult, especially when you're pretty good at things, as he was, to try to do something you're not very good at, and even though it becomes clear you're not very good at it, to keep on trying. And he did do that.
But as he got older, and maybe got a little bit better, he never got normal or good at it. And I wondered if, in fact, he wasn't somewhere on the spectrum, if his inability to connect with you as a person or a young girl or sometimes other people spoke to just a psychological condition for him.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know. The more we look at people, the more whatever their weaknesses are get thrown into a much larger context of their particular difficulties and humanity. There were times when he was very good at connecting, and I felt very seen, and he was dear and generous and kind and loving, and those times felt so great that I thought, oh my gosh, you can do it. We should be returning to this all the time, but then it would be lost again.
Oh my there's whiplash in this book, because you're right. There are times where he valiantly tries to connect with you. You can feel his struggle because it did not come naturally for him.
No,
and then in the next scene, though, there'll be something that you just think, oh my gosh, he's making out with his wife in front of you, moaning and inviting you to watch. And I thought, that's just not normal, but he was trying to make that a normal
scene. Well, and I think the other piece of the equation is he was working really hard in a way that a young child isn't aware of and shouldn't be aware of, but he had a whole other life besides me, right? I mean, I guess it's the prerogative of children to be the center of the world, but there were other things that were pulling at him that I didn't know about and don't know about, and so that forms part of the equation, too. The thing about making out, I mean, that you just mentioned, I often think about that. I I thought about writing the book, and I actually called some people and talked with them about it. His ex-girlfriend, with whom he would do something similar, said, he was so uncomfortable around you that he would sort of lunge toward me in order to feel more comfortable because he didn't know what to say to you. He knew what to say to adults. He was good with them. But this sort of charm and tricks and different techniques that worked on other people didn't work on you. And so he was lost. And she said after a while she had to make sure she wasn't around when I was with him so that he and I could forge our own unique and, you know, albeit somewhat awkward relationship just together. And I found that really interesting, the idea that in the moments when I'd felt so excluded and so peripheral, so unimportant, that someone would just completely pay attention to someone else and kiss them in front of me, those were the moments, in fact, when my presence was animating the scene.
Okay, that's an explanation, but that's a considerate one. You know, I still think that given that discomfort, most adults around their child don't have that reaction. They don't behave that way.
It's very strange. It was very strange, and it was a little bit lonely and confusing as a child. And I think part of the reason I wrote this book is there were moments that were lonely and confusing, and now I'm not alone in trying to interpret them because I have published them in a book, and now everyone gets to wrestle with them and feel them and think about them and metabolize them, and the burden is lifted.
Yeah, that's, a question I have had in reading this. I thought, was it the catharsis that you wanted, or did you want to expose your father for the man that you and I are describing here, that awkward fella? I mean, what was the purpose of writing the book?
I've always loved to write and been a writer, and I deeply, desperately hoped that I would find another subject to write about before this one, so that I could establish myself first as a writer. But this story just kept on coming up, needing to be written, and I finally decided that maybe I had to get this one out of the way before I wrote other things. And it really has been meaningful to me because I found a lot of meaning and achieved certain revelations about things that I didn't understand. And, you know, I guess, like, part of the reason that it's a little bit of a more profound interpretation is that, or it's a more profound story, is that I couldn't really do it in a superficial way and achieve meaning for myself. So I figured the only way out was through.
Lisa Brennan Jobs is on the line. Small Fry, out in paperback this week, is her memoir of growing up as the daughter of Stephen Jobs and a mother who, by the way, was as there for you as she possibly could be, but she had her own demons as well. Life was difficult for her. And your father's, I think, controlling nature exacerbated that for both of you as well. In looking back at your story and all of the vignettes and anecdotes that us readers grapple with, do any of them jump out at you as like, wow, that really happened? That really happened to me? Is there a scene in there that you almost didn't include, or one that you thought was maybe most, representative of what we're talking about here?
I do like that scene. I do like that story of going to stay at my father's house and being alone with him for the first time. I think it's interesting, because I was able to remember it as a child so clearly, and then now to go back and remember it also as an adult and have the double layer of remembering was important. I mean, I've dreamed about having a father my whole life. I've known I have this famous father, but I haven't really known him well. And then we're going to stay at his house for the night on a Wednesday night when my mother is taking a class. And there we are alone, heading through the California hills to his mansion in his Porsche, this young and famous and charismatic father. And it felt so exhilarating. And it also felt, I remember this feeling of, it's not enough. Like, it's almost there, but it's not enough. After all this waiting and missing and longing to have a father, this most perfect father, but to still feel as if the car was kind of silent and the past didn't come rush in and we didn't really even know each other yet. So there was I thought, like, wow, that's an interesting experience. People don't always have this this experience of getting to know their parents almost in reverse, not knowing them when they are young, and then getting to know them later.
Plus, you didn't
want
a Porsche and a mansion. You wanted a relationship with your father. And so you wrote, on the night of my 10th birthday, there was a dinner at a big table at a restaurant called Greens. And at the end, we walked out into the night together. And I walked between my parents, holding their hands. It was ecstasy. My arms were like the hyphen that would be added to my name later, joining the two sides. This is the story you had to write at first, and you write it so well. The prose is just jaw-dropping at times. It's really, really an amazing read, and I want to thank you for writing it and for giving us some of your time today, Lisa.
Thank you so much.
I know we're short of time. You got to go, but please come through Chicago and visit with us in the studio sometime.
Thank you. I'd love to. Thanks.
Are you writing something else, by the way? You working on anything else these days?
Not yet. I decided I'd give myself a year after the double birth of baby and book.
Yeah, you've sired two things there, but do visit with us again. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Lisa Brennan Jobs' book is called Small Fry. She's just got phrases in there, turns of some words that I couldn't help but copy down. Walking along a path in Hawaii, she described the geckos chirping like metal birds. She wrote, the forest was thick with veined waxy leaves, wrapped around other leaves. The fragrance was stronger at night, sweet and cool as if the flowers were exhaling. The air smelled of flowers, decay and salt. That's how you describe a walk in a tropical wood.
Thinking big thoughts. So you don't have to.
All day long.
Here's John Williams.
What I do, this is John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We're here weekdays from 1 to 3 and Saturdays 10 to noon. This Saturday, we're...
Lord have mercy.
Hey, Olaf, where are we going to be on Saturday? Where are they sending us to?
Swedish Days Festival in Geneva, Illinois.
Come see us at Swedish Days Festival. First 100 people to show up get a Volvo. I'm just kidding. We don't have Volvos to give away.
You'd have to pay for the taxes and everything. You don't want to worry about that.
What did you say, Neil Steinberg?
And Volvos are no longer Swedish. They're Chinese.
See, so that doesn't even work.
Yeah.
We're going to give you a Chinese-made car. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. They lost the whole safety thing, and it just went down the tubes.
Thanks again to Lisa Brennan Jobs, the author of Small Fry, for joining us in the last half hour. Thoroughly enjoyed the book. Think you will, too. I did not get a chance to ask her because I hate this when this happens, but she had a hard out at 150. We went to 152, and you feel the clock on her end because Cleveland is lined up. But I wanted to ask her if she thought that her parents' upbringing or bringing her up in that weird life she had led to her kleptomania as a child and as an adult, even on her father's deathbed as she's going through the house in which he'll die, she's pilfering things and sticking them in her purse. It's an interesting life. And she's a little defensive, isn't she? Rightly so. It's her life and it's her book. She says, but I write it and tell it one way, and then sometimes, and then you turn it in and it's done. And then you get the book and read it, and sometimes you read it a different way. And she did not intend for it to be as scathing as it felt to me and to a lot of people. Speaking of good writers, Neil Steinberg, the Chicago Sun-Times columnist, is in our studio. How are you, Mr. Steinberg?
I'm well. I feel kind of naked without a book. You know, I usually come by on book tours, but I haven't been doing one the past few years, so I'm just here bookless.
Actually, he does come by naked sometimes.
Yeah.
He has no clothes on right now.
One of the values of radio.
Yeah.
Man, you have a good life, John. I came up here, I'm like, whoa, look at it. Look at this. This is beautiful.
You wrote a thing a week ago, and you and I haven't had a chance to connect until now. Take cabs while you can, or soon there won't be cabs to take. What did you say about that?
Basically, I came in O'Hare, and I was with my brother coming from visiting our folks, and he was going to take Uber, and I kind of said, Uber or American Taxi, which is my habit, and I compared the two. And I happen to be the one guy in the world who has met both CEOs, Dara, however you say his last name,
right,
of Uber, and John Coyne from American Taxi. And so I quickly grabbed my phone, and I saw that Uber cost more.
than the cab ride
than
was.
The cab ride would.
From O'Hare to your house.
From O'Hare to Northbrook, right. The American taxi is always $31 and Uber was $33.17 or something. And I kind of decided, I mean, I'm technology wins. I use Uber. I'm not a Luddite. I'm not saying we have to go kicking and screaming. However, you can also see what's happening. And what's happening is you have this big international corporation like Uber that takes in billions of dollars from investors and then undercuts local cab companies like ours, like American Taxi, like Checker, like Yellow, and they go out of business, and then Uber charges whatever they want.
And pays the CEO whatever they want.
And pays the CEO $125 million, which is three times as much as American Taxi takes in a year, and only pays the drivers. The drivers have to turn in 25 to 50% of their take, while at American Taxi, they're turning in 6 to 8%. So they pay less to the drivers, and they're going to charge us more.
Plus, the thing that just frustrates me on behalf of the cabs, because I'm a cab guy first, if I can, and I'm like you. I'm not such a Luddite that I don't use Uber or Lyft. I do all the time. I do all the time. But it's amazing to me. If I step out of this building right now, I can catch a cab quicker than I can connect with my Uber driver.
That's the downside of Uber, is you have to connect. In other words, if I go down, I can flag a cab. And that, you know, if I have to wait for some guy to find me, it can be a long way.
Go to the Cubs game at Wrigley today. The Cubs and Sox are playing. After the game, if you are connecting with one of those drivers from Uber or Lyft, not that a cab's going to be easy either, but it's not going to be easy for you as one of those rideshare guys.
I'm going to the Stones next week, and my wife and I were trying to strategize how to get out of it. And my wife's like, oh, we can get an Uber. I said, you're kidding me. After that,
let's go get a cab.
We'll walk to the Grant Park garage.
But I'm also glad. I mean, so not only is a cab oftentimes more efficient, but it's not infrequently less expensive. And I think that gets lost.
It's good to, I mean, look, in 10 years, it's going to be some electric car that has no person at all. And you're going to have a choice of one, and you're going to get in and they'll have no windows and you know, whatever. But I'd like to forestall that. I don't have that many years left in life. And if I can skip that dystopia by pushing it back a few years, I don't mind that.
So what does that mean? You're going to die young, or you want this to take a while?
My chance, dying young isn't really on the table for me anymore, John. I don't know. I write Monday, Wednesday, Friday in the Sun-Times and every day on my blog. So you know, the Uber versus American Taxi thing, I don't think it's the greatest question on earth. But
it's up there. I think that resonates with a lot of people. It resonated with me.
I have heard from a lot of people. And you know, I heard from the head of American Taxi, which I've never Uber's headquartered in San Francisco. And you're never going to hear from them. And just the idea of paying the CEO of $125 million. Well, he wouldn't do it for $25 million and give that $100 million away. I mean, I don't, you know. I mean, look, I guess you take everything you can get. But that just, there's something grotesque about that when you've got people working minimum wage in their own cars.
It's generational, though, isn't it? I mean, I just think older people, and that may be over 40, they're slower to connect with new technologies and ideas.
Oh yeah, no, I got my mother an iPhone just so she could use Uber, just so she would stop letting my father drive out in Colorado. And you know, it's very hard. I walk her through it, but there's just, you know, if anything goes wrong, if there's any glitch, if she has to tap a square, and I guess, you know, you have to have sympathy for that. It was the first time I sent a fax, I made a photocopy so I'd have a copy for my file. So and I saw the letter drop out the other side. I'm like, oh right. So it can be very hard to wrap your mind around. We're human beings, remember, John.
You know, one last thing about it all, too. I think the cab drivers tend to be better drivers. They know the city better in general.
Well, they've been trained. They have three classes, and they get, you know, medallions and all that. I mean, that's the really, we even mentioned that it's unfair. The city's demanded you buy a $30,000 medallion and you take this 3-day course over at Peshtigo Quarter. I've taken that course, and it really gave me a lot of sympathy for cab drivers because I had a hard time passing the test, and I speak English. Imagine having it be your second language, and it's like, where is Swedish Covenant Hospital and all, yeah, that type of thing. And so, yeah, they are trained, and there's someone there who's responsible. And I'm not so sure that Uber's standing behind those drivers when things go wrong.
I just wish the Uber drivers and Lyft drivers would stop stopping in the middle of streets, oblivious to the fact that we want to go around them in the city.
They're looking at a phone, or they don't, you know, they're not used to it.
They don't seem to care.
Yeah.
And they let people out in the wrong places. Okay, sorry all of you rideshare drivers, because we appreciate you listening, but y'all need to work on that. And we as consumers need to maybe work on that. You also wrote a piece, which I think resonates with a lot of people, Talk a little bit about the reaction on your vaccinations.
Yeah, that was yesterday. New York State last Thursday passed a law saying you can't have religious exemptions for vaccines anymore. And people just went nuts because we're so used to honoring whatever it is we believe. The idea that we would sacrifice some of that for the greater good is completely alien to people. And I start the column saying, think about stoplights and imagine, you stop and go and you respond blindly to what this thing tells you. It's almost like a god. And let's say my faith told me I'm not going to obey that stuff. I only obey the Lord God Almighty, and he's going to make sure the traffic gets through safely. That doesn't work. Okay, I blow through that red light, I'm in jail. And if it's my religion, it doesn't matter. And I think people have to understand there's a lot of stuff like that, and vaccines are one of them. I mean, the column sort of talks about following authority. And it's great to question authority in the Vietnam War and all that, but sometimes people know more than you do. And just because Gwyneth Paltrow told you something this morning doesn't mean it's true. And I do think that as people in the media, we have to sort of remind people that.
I think bad information got out, and now we can't get it back.
Yeah,
the American Medical Association and other organizations actually let pass stuff about that now they can't recapture.
Every lie has all sorts of pseudoscience that's backing it up. And also, it's been a long time since a lot of these diseases were out there. People don't remember polio. People don't remember how grateful our parents were to get these vaccines so their kids didn't have to die. And that, we're so fortunate and we're so spoiled, and it's made us so dumb. And it's just sad to see people who the thought that they might be wrong never furrows their brow. And that's why I wrote the column, basically trying to tell people.
And they're using their kids as the petri dish on this, too.
And they're like, oh, I don't want to put anything in their body that's natural. And you're like, well, yeah, the infant death is natural, too. I mean, that's, you have to make sure what you're talking about here. And I do think at some point you have to look at, it's like climate change. You look at the evidence and you have to sometimes go, if 99 of these guys say that it's true, it's probably true. I mean, skepticism has in a way gotten an unfair good name. I mean, it's good to be skeptical, okay, but you can't be skeptical of everything. And I think that sometimes people who, pardon me, aren't that bright think that by being skeptical, they're being clever. It's a kind of philosophy, okay?
I think there's an emotional reaction, too, though, because you described the car going through the intersection, but I think automobiles are different than our personal lives, our beings. And what you might tell me about rules of the road in my car and how it impacts you is different than what you tell me about how and what I ingest, what I personally choose to do or do as the parent of my child. That's almost a different equation.
Well, people who are diabetic need insulin, okay, which is developed in the 20s. And I've never seen a person say, I'm refusing that insulin. I'm just going to die. Okay, so suddenly with insulin, it's okay. And they'll take the injections and they'll live. But because, vaccines, they're sort of, you can slide. I mean, people are skating by on everyone else because there is a infinitesimal chance of some sort of something bad happening from a vaccine. I'm not saying there isn't. Okay, but I'm saying is that if one person, one kid doesn't get vaccinated, he'll be fine. But if suddenly it's 10 or if it's half the class, which we're seeing now, then suddenly kids are getting sick and we're back in the 1940s.
Neil Steinberg wrote about this. You saw that in the Sun Times. Answer this when we come back. And you can call, too, 312-981-7200. Let's talk about the reaction to what you're saying. Gosh, I'm sure it went well. Coming up on WGN. Neil Steinberg is in our studio. He writes a column for the Chicago Sun Times. And every day he blogs.
Yes, I do. Although we can't say the name of the blog on the air. It's EGD. And Neil Steinberg will bring it up. And I'll tell you, every blank, blank day, basically.
Is that hard?
The blog? No, that's fun. It's like you always have to do it. So there's always something, and there's always three times a week it's the column from the Sun Times, things from the Vault, pictures I like. It's, it's a lower bar of excellence in the old internet world.
By the way, we'll do news here in about 5 minutes, and the Dow is really doing well. Producer Elif, where is the Dow Jones right now, please?
The Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 370.92 points. Wow. At 26,483.
Wow, wow, wow.
0.45 points, John.
Whatevs. 370 plus, 26,480 plus. Wow, wow. I guess that has something to do with Europe. Here's Neil with a complete understanding of all of that.
You toss away regulations and pollution controls, and the market leaps up, but it's gonna fall.
I think this had something to do with interest rates in Europe, and I don't know how or why or if it's good or bad, but it seems to me like 26,480 is better than 25,480.
Yeah, no. I may even be able to retire someday.
What are people telling you in after you write a column that says you people that aren't getting your kids vaccinated are crazy? What do you hear?
All sorts of stuff. A lot of this wasn't a problem before we let immigrants in, which is stupid because we always let immigrants in. People with various horror stories saying that their children don't talk to them anymore because they didn't want to vaccinate their kid, and he threatened to, tell the authorities. I mean, a lot of personal stories.
But should the state usurp the parents in cases like this?
Yeah, sure. I'll make it easier. If you don't feed your kids, should the state step in and usurp your role? Yes. Okay, so here you're exposing your kids and everyone else's kids to disease because some imaginary friend of yours says you should. That's not really an explanation. You know, look, you want to be Amish? Go live on a farm in Pennsylvania. Okay, I mean, we are a free country and you're allowed not to do what you don't want to do, but there's a cost. And if you want to send your kids to school, you got to get them vaccinated. You got to clean them. You got to put clothes on them. There's a lot of stuff we have to do in society, John. I think people forget that it's a good thing. If my God tells me my kids shouldn't wear pants, I'm in trouble. Okay, no one's going to respect that. And not getting my kids vaccinated is in the same realm.
Lots of texts. We're out of time, but here's one. John, your guests just summarized what I believe is the source of so much craziness in the world. Somewhere along the line, skepticism has received too big of a seat at the table. Vaccinations, food safety, climate change. It's causing us to take big steps backward. Skepticism has received too big of a seat at the table. That's a pretty good line.
Amen. I'll take that. Yeah.
Did you write that?
No, I didn't. I'm saying is, you've got some smart listeners.
Try not to sound surprised.
No. I showed up, John. I love WGN.
What's the book you're working on?
I went out west with my kids 10 years ago, and I wrote a book about it sort of for them, and I showed it to my agent, and she said she's going to sell it. So it's called The Quest for Pie or What I Did on My Summer Vacation. And it's about the journey we took 10 years ago out west, and it's about trying to be a good father.
Sounds like another good one, Neil. You're always writing well. I always appreciate you coming
by, John.
Too. Thanks
for
saying hi.
Always fun. Good to come here.
By the way, the trip from O'Hare to his house, cab versus rideshare, cab was cheaper.
Yeah. Yes.
Cab was cheaper.
American Taxi was cheaper. $31 set fee plus a tip.
Thank you, Jen. 241 on WGN. This is John Williams. I'm reading through some of the texts that have come in. We started the show today talking about what Hawk Harrelson said about Wrigley Field. He said it sucks, and that was the soundbite that got a lot of attention. But he really wasn't talking about the Cubs fans, or Wrigley Field per se. That is, not from a fan's perspective or a home team player's perspective. But as a broadcaster or opposing manager, he said it was a bad place to be. It wasn't accommodating. He said the same thing about Fenway, and everybody thinks Fenway is one of these great places like Wrigley. They are. But when you hear Hawk Harrelson say, "This Wrigley sucks, I don't want to go there. You couldn't give me $10,000 to walk into that place," I thought, let's not go there. Sox fans are never going to expand their base if they continue to be the second team with a chip on its shoulder. A, win some ball games. Be as accommodating to 8 million people as you can, get everybody under the tent. And saying Wrigley sucks doesn't get it done. But that's the vision or version you got. Then you play the expanded clip and you hear him put it in much more sensible terms, certainly by Hawk Harrelson's standards when talking about Wrigley Field. So I'm happy to hear that. Then we get into a conversation about Wrigley Field, Cubs fans and Sox fans, which has been going on forever. John, it's too bad we can't all just enjoy the game. Perhaps we should quit the crosstown play if there's so much animosity. No, we shouldn't quit the crosstown classic. And there's always going to be some animosity. I mean, that's healthy. I'm not saying that Bears fans not wanting to lose to Green Bay is a bad thing. John, I don't think that they're holding Alcoholics Anonymous meetings at Sox Park. Both teams' fans drink their beer. I just want to enjoy baseball. We all love baseball. We all love people who are the fans of the other team. I'm excited about these games. I am more so now than I've been in a long time. John, White Sox fans like baseball. Cubs fans like Wrigley. That is the attitude that Sox fans need to give up. that we're the baseball fans and Cubs fans are the party fans. That's just, it's not true. And even if it is, find another thing to say, do, think, or feel. That does not help the cause. John Wrigley Field's horrible all the way around. Horrible food, not family friendly, et cetera, et cetera. They've improved Wrigley. It's better than it was. And if it's not as accommodating as Sox Park is, okay, enjoy that. But that it's not accurate to say that Wrigley is a terrible place to go to the game. You go to a game at Wrigley, and it's a nice, it's a, the fans are having fun. Trust me, if the fans weren't having fun, they wouldn't be there. We talked about Uber versus cabs going to and from the airport. You know, I took Uber from my place up by Wrigley Field over to Navy Pier on Father's Day. We went on one of those nighttime cruises along the lake for dinner for Father's Day with the kids. And I didn't know this, but there's a $5 surcharge for the Uber to take you to Navy Pier. I got that on my receipt, the email, your receipt. And it was like $18 to go there. And then there was something else. And then there was a $5 surcharge to go to Navy Pier. I don't exactly understand why. Why they charged me $5 more to go to Navy Pier? I mean, they could have let me off here at the radio station. We could have walked. And that wouldn't got $5, but you cross that line, it's $5. Don't understand that. Do you know that? Do you know why they do that?
I don't know, but my theory is that it's a crowded area with foot traffic, and driving in that circle place at Navy Pier is really hard.
That loop that you drop you off on?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. John, the smartest way to get to O'Hare is the kiss and fly. Yeah, I suppose. If you drive up to O'Hare with your car to pick somebody up, the meanest, angriest, toughest people on earth are the security guards or traffic cops, whoever's working the gates at O'Hare. They are moving you out of the way right now. John, best way to O'Hare is the CTA Blue Line. Totally agree. If that works for you. I mean, you got to get to the CTA and you got to be able to get to the Blue Line. But if that thing is running conveniently for you, the Blue Line is a beautiful thing. John, they're cleaner than Uber or Lyft. Cabs are? I wouldn't say that. John, cabs know where they're going better than Uber drivers. I agree with that. I always take cabs when I can. Neil Steinberg wrote about this the other day and said the cab was also cheaper for him. It's 2:46. We said we'd give away some tickets to the Blackhawks convention. In fact, each day we're giving out a pack of four passes to the 12th annual Blackhawks convention, which takes place July 26th through the 28th at the Hilton Chicago, featuring current players and alumni, autograph, photo sessions. You know the drill. They got those big Q&A panels, thousands of us crowd into there, exhibits, interactive games, and more. Last year they had a kind of hockey rink you were able to slide around on and play. Visit Blackhawks.com to purchase your passes today, or you can win a pass, a pack of passes right now. We'll play a clip of John Weideman's play-by-play of an important goal for the Blackhawks on January, February, March, April 3rd. This is the game April 4th? April 4th. You're sure it's not April 3rd? Okay. Either way, 4th or the 3rd.
I'm not sure. Sorry, you might be right.
I think it's April 3rd. Doesn't much matter. It was a big goal for somebody on the Blackhawks. Who scored this goal?
Bertuzzo to Vince Dunn, Blues line. Fed it ahead, Hawk line. Picked off by Cajula to Toews, Blues line. To Kane, over the line, to the right circle. Put it in front for...
Play one more time.
Bertuzzo to Vince Dunn, Blues line. Fed it ahead, Hawk line. Picked off by Cajula to Toews, Blues line. To Kane, over the line, to the right circle. Put it in front for...
All right, so you don't hear everybody that's on that line, but you may know that line anyway. The question is, who scored that goal? It was a big goal for the Blackhawks. 312-981-7200. Give me the right answer. We'll give you a family pack of four ticks to the convention.
Voices of Pride on WGN Radio. Jerry has lived in Boys Town for 28 years.
I ended up working in a hospice, in an AIDS hospice, for 3 years. And there was a lot of good, I would say, in that it brought us closer together. It taught us to keep an eye out for our individual selves and for those of the community. When I started asking, why wasn't I one of those people that got sick and died? We Small Voice said, somebody's got to be there to take care of them. Somebody's got to be there to teach them and to be with them. We look out for those around us, whether they're part of our tribe or not.
Hear more Voices of Pride at WGNradio.com. WGN's Voices of Pride is presented through the generosity of Jewel Osco, local since 1899.
Introducing the Inspiration Studio at Apt, an exciting showroom that offers a truly unique shopping experience. The Inspiration Studio is home to 12 premium kitchen displays, each with its own stunning look. Part visual spectacle, part interactive experience, and completely inspiring. It's the premier destination for anyone planning a kitchen. Come see it today. Apt. Pleasing people since 1936.
America's oil and gas moves through 2.4 million miles of underground pipelines safely. But one of those pipelines were gone. We would need 90,000 more tanker trucks or 27,000 more rail cars every single day just to meet our energy needs. So, do you want this, this, or this? We move America's energy. We are Energy Transfer.
Policies issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. Not available in all states. For details, visit AIGdirect.com.
Do you have a family? Would you like to help make sure they'll be taken care of if anything were to happen to you? If you answered yes, you probably need life insurance. Now, do you think life insurance is expensive? If you answered yes to that, too, you definitely need to give AIG Direct a call. We could find you a $250,000 policy for just $14 a month, which means you could save hundreds of dollars a year. Call us now for a free, no-obligation quote. 1-800-400-6213. Since 1995, we've helped millions of people find out if they could save up to 70% on their term life insurance. See how affordably we can help you protect your family. Call AIG Direct now for your free quote. 1-800-400-6213. You could save up to 70%. That's 1-800-400-6213. 1-800-400-6213.
251 WGN. Rokan and Anna DeVlantis and the gang are on the road. They're at John Barleycorn, right? Doing their show tonight and getting ready for the Crosstown Classic. Markets are set to close in about 9 minutes. Dow is playing up 370 points, something like that, 340. We're going to close the day, if this keeps up, around 26.4, which is a pretty good day. And what else was there? Something else coming up I wanted to mention. If you need new windows or doors for your home, call the company recommended by Lou Manfredini of House Smarts Radio. Call Gilkey Windows. Gilkey manufactures the highest quality vinyl and fiberglass windows in an endless variety of styles and colors. Call Gilkey down for a limited time. You get $250 off each fiberglass or vinyl window, $700 off the patio doors, no interest financing for up to 12 months. Call Gilkey at 888-3-GILKEY, 888-3-GILKEY. Okay, so this was the clue. Play, can you play the clue first, Elif?
Bertuzzo to Vince Dunn, Blues line, fed it ahead, Hawk line, picked off by Caggiula to Taze, Blues line to Kane, over the line, to the right circle, put it in front for...
Who scored? Hey, John, you're on WGN Radio. Who scored that goal?
Oh, that sounded like a Jonathan Taze goal to me.
It was... in fact, it went something like this.
Bertuzzo to Vince Dunn, Blues line, fed it ahead, Hawk line, picked off by Caggiula to Taze, Blues line to Kane, over the line, to the right circle, put it in front for Taze, and he scores! And Patrick Kane has tied his career high on that goal, assisting on the captain's goal. The Hawks lead 1-0.
Yeah, you got that right, my friend. Well done.
Thank you.
You a hockey fan, are you, John?
Oh, I'm a big hockey fan, King John. Huge. Love the Blackhawks.
You go to the convention every year?
I'll tell you what, I have never made it to the convention. I've always wanted to.
I got four tickets for you, man. Go for us and tell us how much fun you had, okay?
Oh, I love it. Thanks, King John. Hey, are you ever going to do the golf outing to see how many little strokes it takes to get 18 holes done?
That was the speed golf relay. We tried to set the world record for the fastest 18 holes of golf ever played.
Yeah, remember that? I played in that one year. That was a blast.
It was a crisis. It was a lot of fun.
That's when you went in the drink after the 18th ball.
That was the most chaotic, dangerous thing I think we've ever done here.
Yeah. Then let's do it again.
Yeah, you know what? Somebody down the hall is listening, taking notes. All right, let's. If we don't do that this fall, let's do it next spring, okay?
Sounds like a plan, John. Thanks.
Okay, hold the line. You talk to producer Aleph off the air, and we'll get you some passes to the 12th annual convention, okay?
Oh, I am so psyched. Thanks so much.
Oh, boy, John. Thanks for listening to WGN Radio. It's going to be at the Hilton, July 26th through the 28th. You can get your tickets at Blackhawks.com. We tried to set the record for the fastest 18 holes of golf ever played. We'd tee up a golf ball, fill the golf course with a bunch of us. About 100 of us went out to a golf course early one morning. And then somebody's waiting in the first fairway who then runs up to the ball and fires it up to the green where some people are waiting. They putt it, get it in the hole, and then throw it, run it, get it as fast as they can to somebody waiting on the second hole tee box, and they tee it off to somebody waiting on the second fairway. You get the idea. You do 18 holes of golf that way, and you move the ball around. Here's the mistake we made. The person who would tee it off, and then the person would run and get it on the fairway. The person that was teeing it off would then fire another ball, and another ball, and another ball, and he was doing it so quickly that the people that were out in the field trying to gather these balls and fire them forward couldn't keep up. Soon it was just raining golf balls left and right. We needed a little more coordination on the course. balls were going everywhere. It was fun. And I think we could do it. I certainly know we could do it better. So stick around. Maybe we'll do that this fall or spring. The story's the matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. And a preview of the Ro Khan Show with Anna DeVlantis. Say hi to the gang at John Barleycorn in 60 seconds, I think. I'm a little nervous about the transition here, but they say we'll be ready to go. If you've got knee pain, you know to go to the Joint Relief Institute, right? I've been telling you that for a while, knee pain. But you know it's a Joint Relief Institute. So if the joint is your shoulder or elbow, wherever you've got a joint, if that thing through all of these years is ailing you, if it's been compromised through a lot of use, you can't throw a ball anymore with the kids, go to the Joint Relief Institute. They'll use digital imaging to see where the problem is, and then they put painlessly, it's amazing, a joint lubricant into that spot, and it works. It's pain-free, it's quick, it's outpatient. This non-surgical procedure is almost surely covered by your insurance or Medicare, and this is smart. They've got an insurance specialist to make sure you get the maximum coverage. You know how much of a hassle that is. They've got somebody to walk the process for you. And it works. And not only do they get you pain relief, they get you financial relief. A lot of you don't pay a nickel. So don't put up with the pain any longer. They're in Orland Park and Oak Brook, and it's the same number for either location, 708-888-0000. 708-888-0000, as in zero pain. Ro Khan, Anna DeVlantis, come in.
We are here. John.
Oh, hi, Ro.
On location.
At John Barleycorn's. John's are wild. John Vincent is sitting in front of us. We're at John Barleycorn's. You're John Williams.
Yes, I am.
And James McCann, not a John, is going to join us. The about-to-be all-star catcher of our beloved Chicago White Sox.
He's going to join you?
Is going to join us coming up right at the top
Doesn't
of the show.
Doesn't he have to play a game pretty soon?
He's got, listen, hey, easy. Easy. Don't try to talk him out of it.
Yeah, really.
That's a good booking. That's a solid
Maybe
booking,
he'll
John.
Hear you.
He's going to have a beer and some chips. I mean, I just don't like this as a pregame ritual.
Lucas Giolito is going to be here.
He is not.
He is.
You're kidding.
Rick Tellender is going to be here. Chuck Garfine is always here.
Hokey smokes. You know,
and Mr. Richard Roper, who's the most famous White Sox fan in America,
yeah.
to hear him tell it, is also going to be here as well.
Yeah, the smack talking alive with his Sun Times today.
Yeah, I was just going to ask about that. Where are we on the smack-talking chippiness of White Sox and Cubs fans?
You know where I'm all for it. You know what? It's fun to watch. It is fun to be. You know, listen. It's a rivalry. It's a somewhat friendly rivalry. You know, every once in a while somebody gets punched in the head, but mostly a first base coach by the Kansas City first base coach. But it is what it is, and it's just aren't we lucky, John, to have two Major League Baseball teams in this city?
I do want Tim Anderson to hit a home run and do a bat flip.